Blog Talk Radio.
So much media, so little time. Who keeps track of it all? That would be me. This is Bob Andelman, and this is a Mr. Media Interview, sponsored by 1-800-DIALDJs.com. Go ahead, check out their site. And recorded live on blogtalkradio.com from the world's new media capital and hometown of former American Idol contestants, Melissa McGee and Jessica Sierra, Tampa Bay, Florida. Line? That's the question on my mind today as I'm about to welcome Jody Flynn, a producer of the hit A&E reality / documentary show Hoarders, as my guest. Now, I'm not wondering this in a negative way. My family watches a lot of reality TV, from Survivor and Hell's Kitchen to Big Brother and Top Chef. But the definition of reality is quite different from, but their definition of reality, I should say, is quite different from what are essentially game shows to programs such as Hoarders or its sister show on A&E Intervention. The latter shows are serious, intense explorations of people whose lives have gone really wrong, sometimes through their own mistakes, sometimes through no fault of their own. So when I ask, where's the line, I really want to know if there is a point in space we just shouldn't cross out of respect for human dignity. Give a listen to this clip from Hoarders. This is Judy.
My name is Judy. I'm 66, and I'm a recently retired technical writer in the IT arena. I moved into this house in November of 1990. There is still stuff from 1990 that has not been unpacked, as well as all the things I've acquired since then. It just all adds up quickly. To me, the concept of hoarding has always been storing up treasures, bringing stuff in, and keeping it. There are things you say that have no value, except for emotional. Unfortunately, I keep not just grand treasures, but I keep treasures that are not so grand, and I started hoarding trash and garbage. That's not good. A piled up mess. It's not fit to live in, but I was trying to.
So, having played that clip, having said all that I did at the open of the show, does it make me a hypocrite to say you can catch Hoarders, I believe every Monday night on A&E at 10 p.m.? Probably. Jody, welcome to Mr. Media.
Thanks for having me.
How are you today?
I'm well, thank you. How are you?
Okay. So where is the line? Is there a line?
I think there is a line, and I think the line is drawn between reality and documentary series. I don't know that we would refer to our show as a reality show as much as we would call it a documentary series, because what you see is really what is going on out there. It's not manufactured. It's not a game show, as you mentioned in your introduction. There's no competition. It's not a show that we're creating. These are people who are legitimately in crisis and in need of help, and we're coming in and trying to help them when they really need it, as well as cast a light on an issue that really has not gotten a lot of attention, despite the fact that millions of people have this problem. So, you know, is there a line? I guess there is, but I'd like to say that we fall on the side of a documentary series that really is helping people and shedding a lot of light on an issue that probably needs, you know, some research and some exposure to help the people who are out there who think they're isolated. A lot of hoarders think they're the only ones, and they're not.
I guess shows like Hell's Kitchen and Celebrity Sex Rehab with Dr. Drew kind of ruined the term reality TV for documentaries, didn't they?
I think as a production company that produces a variety of different shows, I would probably say that it created different genres, different types of programming. I think reality definitely, the perception is that reality TV can be things that are, you know, more created, where people are brought into different situations, removed from their homes and put in a house in LA and they're going to solve their problems there. Those are very different kind of productions from what you see on Hoarders.
And in producing Hoarders, have you and your team ever seen yourselves approaching the line, whatever it is, and backing away?
You know, I have to say that I don't. One of the things, we're the company that I'm with, Screaming Flea, we're a Seattle-based company and tend to do things a little differently than some other production companies. We really pride ourselves on not crossing that line in a show like Hoarders and actually letting the events unfold as they do and not getting in the way of them, so that what you actually see is actually what happened, not something that we created.
Got it. I did a thinking about this whole idea of a line and whether or not there is one. I was thinking back. I did a book years ago called Built from Scratch with the founders of the Home Depot, of all things. And one of those co-founders, Arthur Blank, talked a lot about managing by electric fence. And he couldn't tell his direct reports where the electric fence was in terms of their limits for their job, but that if they ever touched it, they'd get quite the shock.
I think that's an accurate description of what we do. I couldn't tell you where that is, I guess. You know, there are certain things I could tell you we would not do. We do not put words in people's mouths. We do not create false drama for them. We do not, you know, put problems in their way that didn't exist before we arrived. So, you know, there are certain things we do not do. What you, like I said, you know, the issues that these people are having and the problems that they're facing are real, and that's why we were contacted in the first place. The crews that we use are crews that we have used for years, and that's intentional because we want to make sure that we can trust the people who we're sending into these homes to do the right thing and not walk over that line. But I think that's true. I think if we ever touched it, we'd know it.
I was just thinking, I had interviewed one of the younger producers on Cops a couple months ago, and he was saying something similar about the crews, that it's very important to them that they have people that they've worked with for a while that understand what their role is and what the line is for them, and it gives the producers greater confidence in trying to do what they do.
You have to. We could not do Hoarders without an incredible team. We have more. We had four. We may have more now as we're shooting several shows at a time, traveling the country. And these are people who, particularly our lead field producers, our camera people, the people who are really interacting with the family members and the Hoarders themselves, who are people we've used on shows for years. Because, you know, we also do design shows, and even at that level, we believe we have to respect someone's home when you go into there. It's their space, and they're inviting us in. It's even more important on a show like Hoarders, where someone really is in trouble and someone really is fighting a mental illness, which hoarding is, and to respect what they need and what our experts tell us needs to be done. You know, we really try to take a cue from our therapists and our organizers in telling us what needs to be done and what the hoarder needs to get through this process. We're not creating that. They're leading us, and we're following it as it happens. So, you know, on a show like Cops as well, you have to have crews out there that you trust, and we do.
And, you know, I was just thinking about this show that I have the clips from about
Judy.
Monday
Nights, yeah.
Yeah. I was a little worried, frankly, to hear Judy talk about that she was a recently retired technical writer, and maybe that's just because I'm a writer by trade. Is that what's ahead for me? Am I going to wind up like Judy?
Oh, I'm sure you won't. If your house isn't full yet, you're probably okay. you know, hoarding is one of those things that it starts very, very early on, and it develops. It's not something that happens overnight. You hear almost all of our hoarders say, you know, it's been 15 years, it's been 20 years, and I haven't unpacked something. So, you know, you'll see as the season unfolds this year as well, we're going to see some people who perhaps are on the road to becoming extreme hoarders later in their life, and, you know, kind of what that looks like at an earlier stage and whether that can receive an intervention and kind of stop it before it gets to that point.
Oh, my God. You're actually
gone. If you need an early intervention, let us know.
All right. I'll put my wife in touch with you if that happens. So this season, in the second season, we're going to go from covering people at the end of their hoarding experience a lot of times because there's been this intervention, to you're actually seeing people who are headed down that path. That's just as scary.
Well, it is just as scary, but it's just as interesting in a lot of ways. You know, the hoard itself, the things they have, it aren't necessarily as extreme because they're younger and they haven't had the time to collect it, but their attachment to it can be just as strong. And trying to help them learn how to let go at an earlier stage in life so that they don't go down that road is fascinating to watch. And as Hoarders unfolds over, you know, extensive number of episodes, we hope, we want to show people different angles of the story. We don't want people to think it's just about a lot of junk piled up in a house, because it's not. These people have very personal, impactful stories. The first episode of this season was, you know, a son who had been removed from his home 14 years ago because his mother was a hoarder, and he hadn't been inside the house for 4 years, so he was 28 now. So you got a really different perspective from last season. We've seen several children, unfortunately, who've been removed from their homes or are about to be. And he's the flip side of that. What happens if a child is removed, and what happens as they're an adult when they go back and look at it? So we're trying to present different angles of the hoarding issue as opposed to just showing the same story over and over.
So what are the origins of this show of yours? Where did it start?
Oh, wow. It actually started as a different show called Dirty Deeds that was a lighter show. It was with a company in Southern California that cleans out hoarding homes. And it was a little bit more of a lifestyle show. It kind of walked a weird line that didn't quite work, honestly. And they were fantastic people. The show didn't quite work. But what we realized, and what A&E realized, was that the idea of doing a show on hoarding in general was a powerful idea, and they already had intervention. And so they came to us and said, okay, we don't want to do the exact show that we've got here. Can you come up with something else? And so the show that you see now is the format we came up with. And, you know, the goal was to kind of find a slice of life in a hoarder's 20 or 30-year journey through this process that could really exemplify what the issue is. Because unlike on a show like Intervention, where you can, you know, it's a one-time, hopefully, intervention, and someone can hopefully take the help and go away for 6 weeks, 8 weeks, whatever it is, and really, you know, at least get on the road to recovery, hoarding is a very long-term treatment. 20 years. Some doctors will tell you it's incurable. Some will tell you it can take 20 years. It's a very long-term process, which is why on our shows we are working with people who are facing an imminent crisis and need to clean out their homes, at least to a certain extent, to, you know, not go to jail, to not lose their children, for their spouses not to leave them. So we're not claiming to cure anyone. We're just trying to help them.
Got it. Did you ever personally know anyone who was a hoarder to this degree?
Only the people on my show. I actually don't. I don't. But what we find, is that every time you talk to somebody, or you're at a cocktail party, or at a dinner, or wherever you are, inevitably someone says, oh my gosh, my mother's a hoarder, my aunt's a hoarder, my best friend was a hoarder. Everyone seems to have some kind of story related to it. And I also think people, even if you're not a hoarder, everyone understands that junk drawer you can't clean out, the back of the closet with the shirts from 20 years ago that you know are never going to fit again, but you can't quite let them go. So you can understand that feeling even if you don't go to that extreme, I think.
Yeah, I have an appreciation for the show in that it separated me from the extreme. Because my wife who saves nothing, and then there's me who grew up, you know, collecting comic books and stuff like that. And there's boxes in the garage of comics. There's, you know, 10 boxes of comics. There's 10 boxes of Playboys and, you know, who knows what else. But that's it. You know,
sound so bad.
No, it's not so bad. It's not like, in Judy's story, we learned that you go in the house and you find that, you know, she had to strap herself to her chair at night to sleep in it. That there was adult dirty diapers around. It's just, oh my God, that's extreme.
It is extreme, and it's sad, and it's, you know, it takes on a life of its own a lot of the time, especially when someone's older and it gets to a point where they just can't physically take care of it themselves and they're too embarrassed to let anybody in to help them. And Judy was a perfect example of that. It just got out of her control, and then she couldn't bear to let anybody see what had happened inside of her home until it was, you know, she absolutely had to. So, you know, I think you're okay with the comic books and the Playboys. You'll have to talk to your wife about that.
Well, that's a great way to segue into this. I have another clip from the show. This is Judy's daughter. I think her name is Cece. For some reason, I didn't write it down.
Yeah.
And this is her talking about the experience of growing up and living with a hoarder. So folks, listen to this.
I'm Cece, and I am Judy's daughter. There was always an issue. I remember sitting at the kitchen table with my scrambled eggs. There was always just a small amount of space for the plate and a cup, and that was it. Even then, there was junk mail piled up over the tables. I guess I probably realized my house wasn't normal about the time I started going to sleepovers. I just remember being so excited to go spend the night at someone else's house, and they're like, oh, we want to come spend the night at your house. And just being like, we don't do that at my house. And not knowing how to explain that. I mean, you don't want to tell your friends that they can't walk through your house, and that, you know, that they can't eat at your house, and that there's nowhere to play at your house. You don't want to tell them that, because it feels like it's you. And I still feel that way.
You know, as I listen to Cece talk about her mother and the house and not wanting to bring people back to the house, I was actually thinking that there's kids, you know, teens who, once they realize what's going on in their house, they feel that way about a lot of different things, but it's easier to hide, mom's obsessive compulsive disorder or dad can't stop talking to people when they come in the door and he doesn't know when to shut up, or mom is depressive, or, you know, it's different. Those things are easier to hide because you just
right. You can't. The only way to hide this is to not have anybody over.
Right.
And so that leads to a lot of isolation. And I'm glad you actually played a clip from Cece. You know, one of the important things to us as producers is to tell the story not only of the hoarder, but also of the people that it impacts, because it impacts so many people in their lives, particularly if there are children involved, that, you know, it's important to get that story out and to also help them as well. Our goal isn't only to help the hoarder, but also to help these people who are impacted by the person that they love and the hoarding that they have. You know, we have heard from several of the children of our hoarders from season one who have felt a huge relief once the shows have aired that we portrayed them well and that they felt like suddenly they weren't isolated. Because if you can imagine a hoarder thinks they're the only one out there and they're hiding it, imagine how a child feels seeing their parent who doesn't quite get it, who isn't the one who's hoarding. So I think it provides a lot of comfort for people involved in situations like this to know that they're not the only ones.
It seemed to me, I've seen a number of episodes from season one, and I've been seeing stuff from season two. It seemed to me that a lot of the houses seem to look alike, and maybe it's just because of the trash piled up, but they seem to be smallish, lower income. Is that,
It's a little bit, we have had some larger houses up, you know, above 2,000 square feet, probably not, you know, enormous houses, I guess, by some of today's standards, homes that are being built, but not, it's a mix, and we're trying to work with people at various, you know, socioeconomic levels, different size houses, different things, to show that it's kind of a problem that runs the gamut.
Are there people, who have a lot of money who have this same issue, or aren't they the ones who are able to, you know, people get them help, or is that not the case?
It's a mix. I mean, we've met people who buy extra houses, have storage units, have different places to keep their hoards. So money actually allows it to kind of grow more out of control sometimes and to hide it for a longer period of time. I mean, it's definitely, you know, can be more of an issue for someone who has the money to spend on shopping, collecting, whatever it is that they have, you know, gathering the things that they want, if, you know, especially if it's not just garbage in the home.
And go ahead, I'm sorry.
Oh, no, it can definitely be, a more upper class issue as well.
Well, tell me this, Jody, what is it that compels people? And I talked to the Cops producer about this because it's really the same kind of question. What is it that compels the hoarders themselves to agree to be on TV and sign releases? And do their family members ever contest your coverage while you're shooting and say, these men and women aren't in their right minds, you can't do this?
Never. We've never had that happen. I think that particularly in a case of a show like Hoarders, many of these family members have tried to help their hoarder family member so many times that they're kind of at their wit's end a little bit. And if they're facing a serious crisis, whether they're emotionally or financially depleted in their ability to help, they're turning to us to help them and help their loved one. So we have not had that problem. We have not ever been asked to leave once we show up. We do talk to a lot, a lot of people apply. We talk to them. They get more details. They choose not to do the show. And that's, we totally respect that, and that's fine. One of the things that we pride ourselves on is being extremely honest with the family members and with the hoarders about what the process is and what it involves and what we're doing and what we can provide for them afterwards. And, once they choose to go down the road, what we have found is that they're grateful to have us there.
No one's come and said, oh, my God, you got, and please stop airing that. No one's been,
Not once.
Wow.
Not a single show.
That's great. And just for the record, the answer when I asked that of the Cops producer was, hey, everybody wants their moment on TV, even if it's their worst moment.
Well, in the case of Cops, yeah, that's, TV's really changed in the last 10 to 15 years, and I think that is true. I mean, we've seen it in other shows as well that, it's become so commonplace for so many people to have been on some kind of show, whether it's a dramatic show or a design show or a game show, that it's not as scary to people as it used to be. So I don't think it happens as often. And you refer to, do any of the family members say, you're exploiting them, they're not well, all of those things. We really try, and we've heard this from people who have been on the show and then seen their episodes, that they feel like they're really represented honestly. And I think that's one of the reasons. I mean, we're getting literally hundreds of submissions a week now that the show is airing. And I think it's because it's produced and presented in a really non-exploitive way.
Does the trash you encounter in these homes, does it ever smell any better from one house to the next?
No, it's pretty intense. Our crews definitely are wearing masks when they shoot, throwing out clothes, hazmat suits in some cases, the cat hoarder, everyone was covered up, rubber boots that are getting thrown away. But, it kind of is what it is. And like I said, the crews that we use are people we know and trust, and they, no matter how bad it is, they will be respectful of the person who created it and try to help them through it.
That is brutal. And now that you've been at this for a while, very philosophical question, what do you think causes the hoarding you profile? Is it nature or is it nurture?
Oh, I think you'll have to ask one of our therapists that. My guess, what they say is hoarding is very much a symptom of other OCDs. Mm-hmm. Typically, you don't see it as the only issue someone has, and it's very much a symptom of other things, whether it's abandonment issues or part of a shopping addiction or, it's part of a lot of other things. So my guess is it's probably a combination, but I would recommend talking to a doctor.
Hey, you mentioned that one of the things that will be different in season two is that you're looking at people who are perhaps on their way to becoming hoarders. Are there any other things that are different in the second season from the first?
The first episode, which I mentioned, which, in the first season, every episode had two stories. The first episode of this season was one story because it was so impactful, and because you had the adult son returning, it almost was as if he had his own story to tell, which he did, and he told it, brilliantly and very courageously. I have to add, to go back and show everybody how he grew up until he was 14. So that's one way that we're doing it. I think I'll probably have to wait and let you see kind of what comes down the pike.
Okay.
We're producing them as they go on. So, we're constantly looking for more people to submit their stories and, looking for – one of the things we're looking for is different, like you said, what's the cause? They have different causes. They've had different triggers, whether it was the, sudden loss of a parent at a young age that triggered it and they felt like they needed to keep everything of their parents, or it was, the loss of a spouse suddenly. A lot of times loss will trigger this. So, we're going to try to present stories where the trigger for the hoarding is different so you can kind of see the different causes.
Well, as we get ready to wrap up, I'm kind of wondering, what kind of legs can the show Hoarders have? I mean, and for the people who produce it and the crews, is there a point at which you will have seen enough and you'll want to move on to another show? do something different?
Not for us. We'll do it as long as the viewers want to watch it, and we hope that's for a long time. You know, it's a good question. It's a question that was asked of the show before we started producing the first season. You know, can you tell different enough stories every episode to bring people back? And that's why you will see different background stories, because the hoarding can look the same. Although, you know, we have an episode coming up where one of our hoarders collects beer cans, empty beer cans, and they're worth a lot of money. And so visually that's really different. It's not just trash. So we're looking for stories that have those different elements to make it interesting every single week. So, you know, our hope and our belief is that it has legs.
Excellent. Well, folks, listen, you can catch Hoarders on A&E on cable every Monday night at 10 p.m. You can catch episodes you miss and learn more about the show at the A&E website, www.aetv.com. It's all solid, aetv.com. And you can follow Hoarders on Twitter for tips for fighting the mental disorder and updates on the show. And that's twitter.com/HoardersTV. That's solid, Hoarders, HoarderSTV. And Jody Flynn, thanks so much for joining us on Mr. Media today.
Thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
My pleasure. Good luck to you.
Thanks. You too. Bye.
Bye-bye. And for more interviews with your favorite reality or documentary TV stars, now that I'm going to start breaking that category down, surf over to our main website, www.mrmedia.com. That's where you can listen to my earlier conversations with the stars and producers of Hell's Kitchen, Top Chef, Cops, and many more. Subscribe to Mr. Media on iTunes, and you'll never miss a show. Just search Mr. Media Interviews from within iTunes and subscribe for free. And please tell a friend. You can also listen with a piece of string and a tin can in many locations. If you've got an idea for a guest, email me directly at bob@andelman.com. That's A-N-D-E-L-M-A-N. You can also follow me on Facebook or on Twitter, www.twitter.com/andelman or facebook.com/andelman. And hey, if you see something about our show that you like, go ahead and retweet it to a friend or all your friends. Anyway, thanks for joining us today. I really appreciate you sharing a piece of your day with Mr. Media. Folks, come back and see us again real soon. Thanks for listening.